This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is your host, Jason Hartman, episode number 649. And you know what that means? Our next episode will be a 10th show where we go off on a tangent. Oh no, we never go off on tangents on this show, right? No, the next show will be a 10th episode show, something of general life success interest, how we can live more successfully and hear from the experts on doing exactly that. Not exactly related to real estate investing, but it always ties into our personal finances and real estate in some way. So today, what do we want to talk about? Well, our guest will be yours truly. No guest today, just little old me. How do you like that last episode on how to make $1 million an hour? These Wall Street guys, these hedge fund guys. I mean, it's just, you couldn't make this stuff up. It's so absurd, right? It's absurd. Oh gosh, it's crazy. So $1 million an hour, not bad. Les Leopold talked to us about that on a Flashback Friday episode from a long, long time ago, from over 300 episodes ago. Today, I want to talk about a few things. I want to talk about how it is, well, what time is it? It's an amazing time to be alive. It's an amazing time to be alive. And what impact that has on us as real estate investors, what impact it has on our governments around the world, what impact it has on the value of our currency, the money in our savings accounts, our wallets, our stock portfolios. Hopefully we don't have any of those, but you know, I know there's a few of you out there that still own stock. I haven't convinced you all to give it up yet, have I? No, you know, don't listen to me. Just do what you want. But, well, listen to me a little bit, at least, about the most historically proven asset class in all world history, income property. So, yeah, we'll talk about that. And we will talk about raising rents. What should we do to raise rents? How should we do it? How should we handle it? Just a little bit on that. No, I'm not going to go overboard on it because we've talked about it before many times, but let's talk a little bit about raising rents. You know, the market is very solid. Business for landlords is quite good in almost every case. I mean, I am hearing very positive reports. Landlords have experienced solid appreciation in the last few years. Their properties are rented. They are not having any vacancy issues, really. I know there may be one or two of you out there. I do understand that. But by and large, times are quite good for landlords. So what does that mean? Should we get greedy? Yes. And as it said in the movie Wall Street, you know, greed is good, right? Greed is good. Well, we shouldn't overdo it. Obviously, we got to keep our greed in check. But it does make sense to raise rents. And I'll tell you something, a lot of very proud investors who have false pride, in my opinion, and a lot of very proud property managers who have false or unearned pride, in my opinion, should really understand what I talk about when I talk about the dogs that don't bark. You can't hear the dogs that don't bark, people. They will say things to you like, well, I don't have any vacancies, or my vacancy rate is very low. I haven't had a vacancy in 3 years in my entire property portfolio. Well, you know what that means, don't you? Yes, you more informed people understand the very significant negative read between the lines of that statement, right? You know what I'm going to say here, I hope. If you don't have any vacancies, your rent is too cheap. You moron, raise the rent. You want to have a healthy vacancy rate. What is a healthy vacancy rate? Well, I'd say you should shoot for at least 5%, up to 8%. Now, you got to average this over the course of a couple of years. You can't really equate it. You don't have a long enough sample in 1 year to understand your vacancy rate. But over 3 or 4 years, you can start to get some decent data. And so if you have a, God forbid, you have a 2 month vacancy when you first buy your property, but your tenant stays for 2 years, and then you have a 1 month vacancy between tenants, and then that tenant stays for 2 years, right? What is your average vacancy rate? Well, I'm not doing the math, but I'm saying it hovers around 8, 9, 10%, something like that. Well, let's just say it's over 2 years. Say it's 2 months vacant, then 2 years occupied. That's an 8% vacancy rate. That's really easy to figure out. It's an average of 1 month per year. But if you don't have any vacancies, your rent may well be too cheap. So you got to raise the rent. You should have a healthy vacancy rate. In fact, wise institutional type investors that model this stuff mathematically, that have financial engineers working for these big apartment companies or these big office landlord companies, you know, they do this math and they model, they actually have a target vacancy rate. They don't want to have no vacancies because they know that means their rent is too cheap. So what is the answer here? Well, I was recently reading an article about raising rent, and I thought, again, the author was so misguided. I mean, what is with these people? They just don't freaking get it. He's going on and on about how the prices, the rental prices in San Francisco are so high. Well, he never bothered to examine the prices of real estate in San Francisco, of buying the property, of course. So he never calculated the rent-to-value ratio, which would indicate that rent is actually quite cheap in San Francisco, especially if it's controlled by those frickin' communist rent control freaks. Well, let's exclude the rent-controlled properties and just go with the properties that actually operate in a free market or a semi-free market, because no market's truly free. So if you take those and you take the rent-to-value ratio, San Francisco is a bargain for a renter. It's a great deal to be a renter in San Francisco. And they talk about how 10% plus rent increases in San Francisco are commonplace. Well, yeah, I hope so, because the rent is too cheap. Remember that funny, what was that guy, that funny guy who, was he actually running for president? What was that guy's name? Help me think of it. But years ago, he had this whole campaign, his like plank, his whole platform for his candidacy for some office. Maybe, I don't know, it was president, mayor, governor, maybe of New York or something. And this guy, his whole thing was, the rent is too damn high. The rent is too damn high. And they actually had t-shirts printed up that said the rent is too damn high. And one of our listeners, David, sent me one of those t-shirts. This was years ago. It was maybe, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago. But it was quite funny. Well, the rent is actually cheap in a lot of places, but nobody knows how to keep score. A lot of real estate investors are actually winning the game and they think they're losing because they just don't know how to keep score. They don't know how to keep score. They don't know how to do the math. And that's what Jason Hartman University is all about, the live event like we had in Salt Lake City. And by the way, you're going to be able to buy the online course at hartmaneducation.com very soon. Of course, you can get into our Meet the Masters home study course there at hartmaneducation.com. Check that out. I think you'll really like it. We've had great feedback on it, video and audio based, and all professionally edited. So we don't waste your time with a lot of extraneous stuff. You know, I hate when I get a live audio tape or video of some event and they've got all the breaks are in there and you can tell they spent no money on production or editing. It's really annoying. The rent is too damn high. The tape is not edited. It's just got all this extraneous stuff. They take questions. You can't hear the question. Really stupid stuff. Anyway, we don't do that kind of stuff. We try to put out quality stuff here. So check that out. But if you want to learn how to keep score, you've got to use software. Software-based tools for this. And of course, I love Property Tracker. That is my favorite tool. You can get it discounted at jasonhartman.com. Resources section, save 10 bucks a month, cancel at any time, no contract, first month free, greatest deal ever, try it out, punch in some different numbers, run some scenarios, it's super easy to use, it's self-explanatory, you need no training to use this, punch in the numbers, takes you just a couple of minutes, and start analyzing properties. This, folks, using this exact software 12 years ago, is what made me a really good investor. It made me really understand how to keep score. Of course, I did it before with my trusty HP12C. Yes, the famous calculator, the Hewlett-Packard HP12C. I'm probably dating myself because it's really old. I have like four of these things, and I almost think it's a badge of honor to have an HP12C. You can still buy them. Yes, they've been making that calculator for, I don't know, 4 or 5 decades now. It's a classic. It has no equal sign. And they used to have ads in magazines that said, the calculator that has no equal, which is really true. It's an incredible calculator. But I really learned how to keep score much better and how to do the math much better and how to analyze properties much better when I used Property Tracker. And of course, you can get it at propertytracker.com, but it's going to cost you more. So go to jasonhartman.com, go to the resources page, look for property tracking and analysis software, and save 10 bucks a month on that. It's only $27 a month through our affiliate deal on our website. Also, you can get the app for your iPad or your iPhone in the App Store. Of course, that's just for Apple products, for iOS. Just look up Property Evaluator there, and you get sort of a skinny down version of Property Tracker there. So I think you'll like it. Check it out. But rent increases. I have always said that I believe the target rent increase on average should be about 4% annually. 4% annually. Now, of course, it depends on the marketplace. What does that depend on? Well, if the for sale market to home buyers is booming, that is likely creating vacancies in rentals as people move from the renter pool to the homeownership pool. And as they do that, that will tend to soften rents. And that'll leave you at maybe 3 or 4%. But think of how low that is. I mean, put yourself, there's the old saying, to understand another person, as they say, walk in the other Indian's moccasins for a mile before passing judgment on him or her. And that is a great rule for life in general, of course. But walk in the tenant's moccasins. Think of it from their perspective. If their rent is $1,000 per month, and you raise the rent by $30 or $40, that's 3 or 4%. Do you think they're likely to move for that kind of increase? Probably not, at least not $30, 3%. In fact, they're likely to expect that rent increase. Now, if the rental market is not strong, maybe you can only get away with 2%. But again, raise your rents, pay attention to rent increases, and I also suggest, as I've said before, 2-year leases on your properties. I really do recommend that you do 2-year leases, but your 2-year lease can still have a rent escalation clause in it. So you can say, and this is very easy to negotiate when you do 2-year leases, because the tenant is getting the instant gratification of the low rent for that first year, and usually they'll just agree to that expected rent increase for the second year. So you might say, well, for the first 12 months, it's $1,000, and for the next 12 months, it's $1,030. Very few people move for 30 bucks a month. It's just not worth it. Think of how much it costs them to move. You know, a lot of tenants are do-it-yourselfers, of course, so they have to rent a U-Haul truck. Yeah, they probably got to hire someone to help them or do it themselves. It's going to take their time. Time is money, of course, blah, blah, blah. So most people won't bother for a small rent increase. But you want to get in the habit of doing rent increases because you don't want to be stuck with a property where you've been a lazy landlord and 5 or 6 years down the road, you still own that property and you haven't, and your tenant is still there. Of course they're there. You haven't raised their rent. Why would they have any incentive to move? They've got such a great deal. 4 years go by and you should have been raising it 3 or 4% a year, maybe, if the market supports it. Don't be reckless. I'm not saying be reckless. Maybe you can only raise it 2%, $20. But $20 is $240 per year. And the cumulative effect of doing that over the course of 3, 4, 5, 10 years is very significant to your bottom line. And hey, $20 a month, you can buy lunch with that, right? In fact, you can buy lunch for two at Chipotle. Just, you know, Chipotle, very good, healthy food. Just, you know, hopefully they're going to eliminate that sickness problem they've had. But I'm a Chipotle fan. So you can buy lunch for two with guacamole. For two and a water, okay? Yeah, I always get a bowl to go. That's my preferred lunch at Chipotle. All right, so enough on rent increases. How's that all sound, folks? You gonna do it? Yes, be an attentive landlord. Raise your rents. Peter Diamandis, I'm a huge fan, as you know. He's the, well, what do I even call him? His co-author was on the show, Stephen Kotler. I believe that was their first book that they wrote together, Stephen Kotler and Peter Diamandis. Diamandis, by the way, if you want to look him up, D-I-A-M-A-N-D-I-S. And he is, I'll call him a futurist. I think that's probably what he calls himself. I don't know. But he has some great stuff, and I love looking at his stuff. When Stephen Kotler, his co-author, was on the show a while back talking about the book Abundance, The Future is Better Than You Think, it really does make you realize it is an amazing time to be alive. So his latest newsletter, he talked a lot about materials science. And the science of various materials, and you know I've talked before about this new incredible material called graphene. I think that's how you pronounce it, graphene. And graphene is this thin, it's ultra thin, uber lightweight, incredibly strong material, and I believe it's 200 times stronger than steel by weight. Incredible. It's an amazing time to be alive. So you're going to see a lot of incredible breakthroughs in materials sciences that will make our houses better, our cars, our aircraft, everything, our electronics, our cell phones, everything will get better, stronger, cheaper, waterproof, just amazing, amazing things happening. My friend Bree, she posted a thing on her Facebook just the other day about these new photovoltaic cells, solar cells, that are now part of glass. You can see through them. So virtually every building in the world, every automobile in the world, every airplane in the world could be producing energy through its windows. Yes, not quite as efficient as a traditional solar cell that is opaque, but amazing, totally amazing. So Bree, thank you for posting that. It was incredible. So material sciences, let me go into his newsletter just a little bit here and really think about this. And I have a feeling we're not going to have time. I want to talk to you about population. We'll do that on an upcoming show. But I've talked many times about longevity, of course, on my longevity and biohacking show as well, and how the wide-ranging, vast impact this longevity boom that we're in will have on governments, on inflation or deflation, on the welfare state, on Social Security, on Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, the entitlement crisis, really, that we are in worldwide. So, you know, we're not going to have time to get to that today. Let's talk about material science for just a moment. So Peter Diamandis, in his latest newsletter, is talking about the top 5 anticipated material science breakthroughs. And this is right now, 2016 to 2018. And he's got this Deloitte consultant, And he is, Jeff Karbach. He's a chemical engineer, materials scientist, entrepreneur, and head of advanced materials at Deloitte Consulting. Okay. So that's who he's referring to. And he says in these breakthrough, where is it? Okay. Top five anticipated breakthroughs in the next 2 years, folks, it's right here. Okay. Here are Jeff's prediction for the most exciting disruptive developments coming in materials science over the next 3 years, if you count the whole year. Okay. As entrepreneurs and investors, these are areas you should be focusing on as the business opportunities are tremendous. Okay. And they mean a lot for inflation deflation equation, right? Because as we do this change, we've talked a lot about 3D printing. Of course, I have probably bored you to death with my continual talk of the self-driving autonomous automobile and my experience with my Tesla and so forth. So a little bit more on that over time. But here, let's just focus on the materials components, okay? So one of these predictions is that metamaterials will become widespread. The continued convergence of supercomputing capabilities, modeling software, and micron-level additive manufacturing. Now, this is me talking. I think you can tell when I'm talking or when I'm reading Peter's newsletter. Additive manufacturing, that's basically 3D printing. Because when you 3D print, you're adding materials and creating something basically with an inkjet printer that's just three-dimensional. That's what 3D printing is. So this is now micron-level additive manufacturing, 3D printing of tiny little things. And other manufacturing techniques will allow us to increase our ability to predict, engineer, and construct metamaterials that will have incredible properties that have not been found in nature. For example, making objects behind them invisible. You've probably heard of this, right? Me talking. The military is investing a bunch of money into cloaking devices. In fact, you saw this on a James Bond movie, a few James Bond movies ago. And by the way, I'm not a huge Daniel Craig fan. What do you think of the newer James Bond that's been around for the past couple movies? I think that guy's a little too much of a, I don't know, he's too thuggish. You know, the James Bond should be kind of suave kind of guy. But anyway, that's my vision of James Bond. The older James Bonds I like better. But remember that James Bond where they were in the Ice Hotel? Where is that, in Sweden? It's on my bucket list to go and stay at the Ice Hotel. A few of my friends did it a couple years ago, and I couldn't do that trip with them, so I was really bummed out. But the Ice Hotel, he had, of course, the swanky Aston Martin DB9, and it had a cloaking device that made the car invisible. How does it do that? Well, basically, it just takes a picture of everything behind the car and puts that image on the side of the car that you want to make invisible. And the military is spending a ton of money to outfit troops in clothing that does this. So if you have a bunch of cameras looking behind you, and on the front of you, you basically have a soft television screen, for lack of a better word, you can just play the image behind you on the front of you. And then the front of you is now invisible because anybody looking at the front of you is just looking at what's behind you. You're not there. Amazing. It's an amazing time to be alive, okay? Now, there's this other material, and forgive me if I pronounce this wrong, in looking at Peter's newsletter. It's called perovskite. How do you say that? Well, I'm sure we're going to hear about it, so forgive my mispronunciation, but I'll say perovskite. Solar cells will beat silicon photovoltaics, okay? If you don't know about perovskite, listen up. This is an amazing material that happens to make very efficient and cheap solar cells. When it's used in solar voltaic properties, they were discovered 5 years ago and had a conversion efficiency of only about 4%. But now, and I'm paraphrasing here, they're at 20% and expected to rise to 30% efficiency in the next few years. Here's the kicker. The cost is 100 times to even 1,000 times cheaper than traditional silicon solar cells. Expect deployment. Now, this is actual deployment. Next year, yes, 2017. It's an amazing time to be alive, as I always say. This is going to be a major contributor in moving the planet towards solar-powered future. And look, you know me. I'm very practical about this. I don't believe a lot of the crap that comes out of the environmental left and what I call the green weenies. I have poo-pooed solar for many years. But look, we all want a cleaner planet. We all want a better world. We all want cheap, abundant energy, of course, that doesn't pollute. Of course we want that. And I have just said that you don't see widespread adoption of solar because it's subsidized by the government. No one is buying this crap and putting these solar cells on their house out of free market choice, because they don't make any sense without the tax subsidies. So if you get rid of that, that's when you know something works, if you don't have to subsidize it by the government, right? You see all these pseudo-governmental institutions and governmental institutions. Yeah, they've all got solar on their roof because it doesn't make any economic sense. But hey, times they are a-changing, as Bob Dylan said, and that's going to be good news for us all. It's an amazing time to be alive. All right, let me wrap this up. AI, artificial intelligence, coupled with the Materials Genome Initiative, the MGI. Now, this is, as Peter talks about, basically like mapping the materials genome like we've mapped the, we've sort of mapped, haven't exactly, the human genome, I guess, in every way. And by the way, did I tell you this on the last show or last week? I just read an amazing article that says that they have basically created half of the human genome synthetically in a lab now. Half of it. Wow. I mean, we are going to face incredible questions about playing God, but it's an amazing time to be alive. It's just, it is incredible. The stuff we are going to see in the next literally just 5 years are going to blow our minds. All right, moving on to his newsletter. The Materials Genome Initiative, developed over the past few years, will come into full impact as cloud computing and machine learning is basically a form of AI, by the way, allow scientists to discover new material combinations and material properties. Expect a lot of commercialization efforts resulting from the application of AI. You'll be able to say, I want to build a next generation implant for my knee. And your artificial intelligence, whatever tool you're using, will understand the possible materials available and help you choose the ones that are going to be the most reliable and the safest, and of course, the most cost-effective, right? He doesn't say that, but that goes without saying. All right, number 4, we're almost done. Carbon nanotubes and graphene will significantly extend Moore's Law. All right, folks, of course, me talking here, I think you can tell when I'm talking or when I'm paraphrasing Peter's newsletter, right? Moore's Law, of course, you know what that is. Gordon Moore, back in 1965, the co-founder of Intel, blah, blah, blah. He was at Fairchild Semiconductor, and he basically says the power of the processor will double about every 18 months. Okay, if you read the Wikipedia entry, as I just pulled it up before this show, it says 2 years. But 18 months is, I think, what he really said. So about every 18 months or so, we'll have Moore's Law, where it just makes sense. And by the way, when we talk about economics, when we talk about the government misleading us on inflation, that applies to Moore's Law. Why does it apply? Make the connection, everybody. Because the three basic ways the government manipulates the index and lies to the population about real inflation are, you remember, I've talked about it many times, weighting, substitution, and hedonics, the hedonic index. Well, Moore's Law gives the government a huge amount of fuel and a huge amount of rationale to use hedonics to make it seem like inflation is lower than it really is. And I'll just say this one more time. So weighting, how much weight they give to any particular thing in that basket of goods, which comprise the consumer price index, the CPI, right? Substitution, if the price of beef goes up, they'll say everybody will just eat chicken instead, but maybe you don't like chicken. Chicken's a dirty bird, so you'll eat beef instead, or you'll eat chicken instead of beef because beef went up. Substitution, right? So they lie. Maybe you don't like chicken, right? So they just assume everybody will switch and they change what's in the basket. And hedonics means that they say, well, look, the computer you bought 2 years ago, I'm looking at my MacBook Pro, and it's about a year and a half old. I usually get a new one every year, but this last iteration, it wasn't good enough for me. So I was just kind of waiting for the next one. But they'll basically say, look, if you paid $2,800 for your MacBook Pro, as I did, and I always pay about $2,800, but the computer just keeps getting better and better every time I buy it, right? So it's twice as powerful as the last one. And that means you really, in the way the government does the indexing with hedonic indexing, hedonic from the word hedonism, meaning pleasure seeking, the amount of pleasure you get from the item, right? And I get lots of pleasure from my MacBook Pro. I absolutely love it. Thank you very much. Sorry, PC users. I know you've got a hard life. I was one of you for many years. And when I switched, my life became much more pleasurable. So hedonic indexing substitution from PC to Mac. Hey, I guess they could do that too. Okay, so the government basically in the index says you really didn't pay $2,800, even though that is what you paid. They only do the math in a way to calculate you paying $1,400, half of $2,800, right? They do that because they say that with hedonic indexing, you got twice as much for the same price. But the reality is, you paid the same price. So it's BS. I mean, there's a rationale for it, but here's the problem with the rationale of hedonic indexing. Hedonic indexing says you, the consumer, you, the person whose lifestyle is being affected by the way they index inflation, you don't get progress, the government gets progress. So if they did this back to the era when the wheel was invented, okay, and they hedonic indexed, they would say everything costs basically nothing today because the wheel has made everything so much more efficient, right? And you get so much more pleasure out of a car that has wheels instead of slaves with feet pulling you along in Egypt on a, well, not a rickshaw, but whatever those things were that they had. Okay, back to material science, right? So you understand Moore's law. We got off on an inflation and indexing tangent. So Peter says, carbon nanotubes and graphene will significantly extend Moore's law. If Moore's law is to continue, we'll need fundamentally different ways to organize materials into computers. Graphene and carbon nanotubes. Now, hey, Fernando could tell you all about this stuff. And Victor, one of our listeners, could tell you all about it. And Raman, I'm sure, could tell you all about it. All those people, you know, that Fernando worked with at Apple and are now clients of ours. So are among the most promising solutions. Its unique properties will allow us to continue to improve the price performance of computing. We'll even be able to manufacture a chip using traditional technologies, then add graphene functionality through materially pre-programmed self-assembly. I don't even know what that means. Okay, maybe one of you know and you'll send me a note on that or connect with me on Voxer and let me know. All right, last point here on the material sciences. And this is amazing, by the way. It's an amazing time to be alive. Recyclable carbon fiber composites. Okay, look, maybe you've heard about this. This is just me talking. Maybe you've heard about this absolutely disgusting pile of litter floating in the Pacific Ocean, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and it's literally the size of Texas. Have you heard about this thing? They have a name for it. I can't remember what it's even called. But basically, there's some sort of whirlpool, the way the currents go in the water, that just sort of keep all this trash, this disgusting trash, floating around, and it's the size of Texas in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, right? So there are plastic bottles and all of this trash there. But one of the complaints of the environmentalists have always been, look, you know, plastic, although they consume it, but plastic never goes away, right? And these synthetic materials, they don't degrade. You can't reuse them very well. There's all these problems with them. They're like, that's why we have this disposable society philosophy. Well, here you go. there's a change a-coming. All right? Recyclable carbon fiber composites. While high-performance thermoset composites have enabled breakthroughs like the Boeing Dreamliner and the BMW i8. Okay, have you seen the i8? That's a pretty swanky-looking car, but I'm not much of a sports car guy. I like bigger cars, so I didn't get one. The challenge has been that it is a use-once-and-discard phenomenon, unlike aluminum and steel that can be melted down and reused. But recent breakthroughs can change this, increasing their utility. And Jeff, our Deloitte consultant that he talks about, as Jeff explains, quote, there have been real breakthroughs in chemistry that allow us to, get this, folks, reverse that chemical reaction that makes the plastic composite. It will depolymerize it back into a liquid and then reuse it, unquote. That is incredible. Reminds me of the Terminator movie. You know, Terminator 2, when the morph out of nothing, right? Okay, so that's it. Check out Peter Diamandis' work. It's awesome. He runs a thing called Singularity University. Really cool stuff. Go to jasonhartman.com and check out the show we did with Stephen Kotler, his co-author. Maybe we should play that as a Flashback Friday sometime. But barring that, just go look it up. Go to jasonhartman.com, type in abundance, and you will find it. Or type in Stephen Kotler, and I believe that's K-O-T-L-E-R. As I recall. And that's it for today. Check out jasonhartman.com for more properties. We've got some great investment properties out there. Inventory is scarce, but we're picking the good stuff for you as we always do. Be sure to subscribe to the show. If you're not an actual subscriber, you don't want to miss any episodes. So be sure you actually subscribe to the show using iTunes, our website, Stitcher Radio, or whatever platform you're using. And please review the show. Give us a review on that, on whatever platform you use. We'd love to hear more from you, and we appreciate the reviews. It helps move us up in the rankings, especially the good ones, of course. Tell your friends about the show, and happy investing, and I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.